The following program features the opinions of the host. Listeners are encouraged to seek their own understanding.
Welcome to the Ghost in You podcast. I'm your host, Diane, and this is episode 17. And yes, it's been about a year and a half since I've done an episode for the Ghost in You. Been very busy with life and the other podcast I host. But as 2024 rolled around, I started to feel this sense of urgency inside of me. And I don't know if a lot of you are feeling the same thing right now. And as we're looking forward to April of 2024, there were a couple of things that I wanted to discuss. The format of the Ghost in You is going to change just a little bit. It had been very scripted, but it's also going to have some of my opinion and a lot of things that I see going on right now with a focus on prophecy and the end of the age, because I believe that we are living at the end of the age. I don't know about you guys, but I was born back in the 70s. And as I was growing up, there was always these, we didn't call them at the time memes, but they were kind of like memes that would go around and there'd be a guy carrying a sign saying, "The end is near, repent now." And we'd kind of laugh at those things, or maybe in real life, you'd see a guy, there was one in Denver who would carry a cross around and he was always carrying a sign about repent now, the end is near. And, you know, some 30 or 40 years later, I'm still waiting. But I think we are finally getting there. And a couple of the things that have me really looking at the fact that we probably are at the end of the age and getting ready to go into the Messianic age are a couple of events that are coming up here in April of 2024. And that is a total solar eclipse that's going to happen over America and Passover that's going to be celebrated over in Israel at the end of April. A very rare total solar eclipse will be in the skies over 13 states in America on April 8th, 2024. A solar eclipse, as most of you are probably aware, occurs when the moon passes between the sun and the earth, and when it's total, only a very slim bit of the sun is seen around the outside of the moon. There's only a very small area in the entire world that will see a total solar eclipse when a solar eclipse is happening. Most places will see something partially. For example, this solar eclipse is going to be over 13 states, but nearly every state in America, including Alaska, will be able to see a little bit of the moon over the sun. What piqued my interest about this upcoming one is that despite being rare, the United States had another total solar eclipse pass over on August 21st, 2017. This was almost exactly 7 years ago. Seven is an important number to Yahweh. We talked about that in the numerology episode. Signs in the heaven are very important as well. Genesis 1, verses 14 to 18 reads, "And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good." Solar eclipses have marked important events, with one of the most important being the death of Yeshua on the cross. It's the reason why the sky became totally dark at the time that he actually died. A solar eclipse was happening. Another total solar eclipse occurred in Nineveh, right before Jonah arrived to tell them that they needed to repent and turn to the Lord or they would be destroyed. The solar eclipse in 2017 started in America at Lincoln Beach, Oregon, and ended near Charleston, South Carolina, around Fort Sumter. This route included seven U.S. cities named Salem, which means peace in Hebrew. It's kind of odd to have a path of peace that starts over in Salem, Oregon, and in the location where the Civil War started. And the chances of an eclipse line that only measures 130 miles across, crossing through seven cities with the same name, is interesting. Certainly not a coincidence. In my book, most people who know me know that I don't believe in coincidences. These cities were Salem, Oregon, Salem, Idaho, Salem, Wyoming, Salem, Nebraska, Salem, Missouri, Salem, Kentucky, and Salem, South Carolina. The upcoming total solar eclipse over America will happen on April 8, 2024. And interestingly, the path it forms will cross over the one that happened in 2017, forming an X. Where the two lines cross directly is over Illinois, in a city called Carbondale. If one zeroes in to the exact spot where that X comes together, at the very midpoint, one finds Salem Road, less than 10 miles to the southwest of Carbondale. I hope that the use of this passing through all of these cities named Salem and then having the Salem Road part of it is a foreshadowing of peace, but I don't necessarily think that is the case. I also want to point out it's interesting that April 8th is the day that the solar eclipse is supposed to happen. If you add 4 and 8 together, you get 12, pretty significant number to the Lord as well. I want to address a TikTok video that went viral. There's a lot of people that have been talking about, oh, this other solar eclipse, the one that's coming up, is going to pass through a bunch of cities named Nineveh in America. And you've had some prophetic ministries that have been talking about it. And other people have been talking about it on TikTok and Instagram. And I'm like, did any of these people like map out the Ninevehs on a map? Because if you have a map that stars out all of the cities named Nineveh in America, and there's 8 of them, there's no way an eclipse could go through all of them unless it was drunk, I guess, maybe, because they're all over the place. It's not even possible. So I wonder how many people actually research things before they actually say it and just go with what they hear from other people. And it looks bad because you've got mainstream media like Newsweek debunking it and other fact checkers debunking it. And so they're like, hey, Alex Jones said blah, 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 blah. And then Alex Jones looks foolish as well as anybody else who went with it, because clearly this total solar eclipse is not going to go through all these cities of Nineveh. But I did want to say a few things about this, because there is something really interesting when it comes to Jonah and this total solar eclipse. And maybe people just weren't zeroing in on what they should. And maybe I have a little something here that I wish they had seen. So there are 8 cities in America named Nineveh. Only 2 of them are going to be in the path. There's one in Indiana and the others in Ohio. But I thought, you know, there's other things that are connected to Jonah. How about the actual name Jonah? There is a city in Texas named Jonah, and it's in the path too. And Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh. For people who don't know, Nineveh was full of these people called the Assyrians, and previous to them having their city here, they'd pretty much gone in and wiped out all the Israelites. So when God comes to Jonah and he says, I want you to go tell these people to repent so that I can save them, Jonah's thinking, I don't want to have anything to do with those people. I sure don't want to help them get saved. He decided to flee, and he fled to a city called Joppa. Well, interestingly, there are 3 cities in this path that are named Joppa. There's Joppa, Illinois, Joppa, Texas, and Joppa, Indiana. So by my count, we have here 2 cities in Nineveh, you've got Jonah, and then you got 3 cities of Joppa. I wish I would have found one more, because that would have been really cool. I looked up every single Joppa. I looked up every single Jonah, Nineveh. If you guys can think of something else that would be connected to Jonah that is in this line, let me know. And then we have our 7. But why should we pay attention to these links to Jonah anyway? Because Matthew 12:38-41 says, then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered him, saying, and they're talking to Yeshua, teacher, we wish to see a sign from you. But he answered them, an evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For just as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great whale, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it. For they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And behold, something greater than Jonah is here. Of course, the direct interpretation is that Jonah died in the whale. I mean, it doesn't specifically say that in the Bible, but I think we all understand a man could not live inside of a whale for 3 days. So he was raised from the dead when he came out of the whale, which to me is even more miraculous than God keeping him alive in the whale. He goes and he preaches to Nineveh. Yeshua likewise was dead for 3 days, and he was resurrected, and the gospel then was preached to everyone rather than just to Nineveh. But perhaps there is more. Prophecy does seem to indicate that there will be a great revival in the last days. All 7 solar system planets will be in the vicinity of the eclipsed sun, although not all will be visible to the naked eye. That to me is pretty amazing. You're going to have all seven planets, if you don't count Pluto. They keep going back and forth about whether poor little Pluto is a planet or not. But the other planets out there are going to be within the realm of where this eclipse is going to be. Pisces has Venus in its southern half, so it will be there with the eclipse. So we've got the constellation Pisces. And I think everybody knows that that represents a fish. And although we always say it was a whale that swallowed Jonah, there is also writing that it was a fish, a giant fish. But there's also this whale constellation, which is called Cetus. And it will also be right there near Pisces. So it's going to be within the realm of the eclipse. And when you have the total eclipse happening, the sky will get dark and you'll be able to see the stars and everything else. So most of this stuff you'll be able to see, the constellations and such. The reason why you won't see some of the planets is that they're just so far away and so small that we can't see them with the naked eye. I found something else out that I thought was of interest. Maybe you guys will too. I ended up on a solar eclipse path map that was hosted by the National Park Service. And don't ask me how I got there, because when I start digging into stuff, half the time I'm like, how did I end up here? But I looked at the map to see if there was anything interesting about the national parks and monuments that are part of the total solar eclipse path. And one is called Perry's Victory Memorial. I had no idea what that was, so I looked it up. And it was established to honor those who fought in the Battle of Lake Erie during the War of 1812. The actual memorial is a Doric column that rises 352 feet, which was just kind of weird to me to have just this large column marking the spot. It's not like a tablet or, I don't know, a sculpture or something like that. It's just this large column. A large column as a symbol seems significant to me. I wondered if columns had any biblical meaning, particularly in regards to the end of the age. Revelations 3, 10 to 12 reads, "Because you've kept my word about patient endurance, I will keep you from the hour of trial that is coming on the whole world to try those who dwell on the earth. I am coming soon. Hold fast what you have, so that no one may seize your crown. The one who conquers, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. Never shall he go out of it, and I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem, which comes down from my God out of heaven, my own new name." Does this mean anything? I don't know, but it's interesting if these two eclipses are thought to have prophetic significance. A pillar is also known as a column. So is this just some kind of a message to us all that as you see it passing over this tall column, this is what we want God to see us as? That we are a pillar and a column, and he's going to put us in the temple of his God, because we are going to hold firm, stand firm for whatever is coming, because we are going to have some tribulation. I will get into some of this on other episodes. I don't want to get into a pre-trib, post-trib, mid-trib, whatever kind of discussion right now. I will just leave it at that I am not a pre-tribulationist, so I don't believe that we're going to be raptured out of here before the bad stuff starts. So we need to be prepared to go through it. And I believe Revelations is telling us to be strong, because if we conquer it, we're going to be given a great place in the temple of God. I also find it interesting that it mentions in this group of verses, "and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem." The fact that New Jerusalem is named with these seven Salems being passed through, and then that Salem Road, it just is very interesting to me, especially because where they both cross, X marks the spot. Zero in, zero in, zero in, it's Salem Road, the road to the New Jerusalem. I don't know. Maybe nothing, but I find it fascinating. The eclipse in 2017 ended at Fort Sumter, as I said earlier. The eclipse in 2024 begins at Eagle Pass. What combines these two things, for those who don't know, Eagle Pass is where the last Confederate force in the field that was known as the Shelby Expedition buried the last flag to fly over Confederate troops. Is this just a coincidence? Fort Sumter is where the Civil War started. Eagle Pass is kind of where it came to an end. We all know there was the signing of the treaty at Appomattox, and that was what we would consider the end of the war. But for the Confederates, this was it. The last flag to fly over Confederate troops is buried. Put away, it's done. I don't know. I don't believe in coincidences. So I find both of those things, again, to be very fascinating. And then there is this other sign that will coincide with the April 2024 eclipse. Comet 12P, Pons Brooks, only comes around every 71.2 years, so it's very similar to Halley's Comet. The nickname of this comet is the Devil Comet, because it looks like it has horns. It will be visible during the Great American Eclipse, during totality when it's dark. It's going to be about 25 degrees away from the eclipse sun. So basically, I've told you there's all these things to be looking for right when the total eclipse is happening. So first of all, you have to be in a location where you will actually see the total eclipse. So you have to be in this pathway, which is not a lot of you. And then I think most people realize a total eclipse lasts between 2 to 4 minutes, basically. So it's not a lot of time to stand there and look around and be like, I can see the sun setting over here. I can see the planets here. I can see this constellation. I can see this, this, and this. Plus, I'm also looking at the eclipse. And then I'm asking you to look for a comet, too. Just a little creepy that the Devil Comet is supposed to be flying through the air at the same time that all this other stuff that seems to maybe have some prophetic significance is going on. There are 88 constellations in the sky. And of course, I mentioned a couple that are going to be a part of the sky when the eclipse is happening. And these constellations are signs as well. They never talk about that stuff in church, do they? They don't want you talking about stars because they always equate that to astrology. But this is astronomy. And these are things that God made and he gave them to us. And he said they were going to be signs for us. So we're supposed to actually look at them to see if they're telling us something. These constellations were put in the sky for a specific reason, and their names are so significant, and what is happening around them is very significant as well. The most mind-blowing sign that has happened in my lifetime happened on September 23rd, 2017. So this was shortly after we had the total solar eclipse in 2017. The constellation Virgo symbolizes Israel. On this particular date, Mercury, Venus, and Mars join the constellation Leo, which is a lion, right above the head of Virgo. Leo has 9 stars in its constellation. So that, with these 3 planets, Mercury, Venus, and Mars, made 12 stars, and they were above Virgo's head. Basically, a crown of 12 stars. Remember that. Jupiter had been inside of Virgo for 42 weeks, and on this date, it moved in circular retrograde and passed through the legs of Virgo. This is the only time in 7,000 years that this sign has appeared. And even crazier, it couldn't be seen with the naked eye because it happened during the day. The only reason we know that this sign conjunction, all these things happened together, was because of computers. Computers were able to show it to us. So only our modern age would see such a thing. To me, it seems like this sign was meant for us at this time. And why was this significant? Revelation 12, verses 1 to 6 reads, "And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon, with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. She gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days. So as happened with this conjunction, you've got Virgo, who seems to be a symbol for the woman. She's got the 12 stars making up a crown above her head, and Jupiter is circling around in what seems to be the middle of her body and passes out of her legs like she's giving birth. But on top of that, a crescent moon had also been under Virgo's feet. And in this chapter, it has with the moon under her feet. Also at her feet was the constellation Serpens, which represents the dragon. Above its head was the Corona Borealis, which is made of 7 stars. And hear this said, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns. So are those 7 stars possibly the 7 heads? And then just for giggles, because I'm a numbers person, I wanted to know, what were the number of days between August 21st, 2017, when the total solar eclipse happened, to September 23rd, 2017, when this conjunction of all these stars and constellations happened, and it was 33 days. That number's a favorite of the globalists. I don't know if it's significant, but just another tidbit to put out to you. All right, so that's about the eclipse that's coming up here in April. Now, what is this about Passover that I seem to be so interested in? We have Passover every year. I think most people know what Passover is about in general. Passover this year is going to start on the evening of April 22nd, and it goes for a week through to Tuesday, April 30th. It is one of 3 pilgrimage festivals that the Jewish people observe. Yahweh had commanded Moses to tell the Israelites to mark their doors with lamb's blood. They were supposed to put it all across the threshold. So this was the sides of the door and the top of the door. And this was so when the angel of death came through Egypt and was going to kill all of the firstborn there, the firstborn of the Israelites would remain untouched. So this blood on the door was their protection from this judgment that was going to come on to Egypt. And it was after the death of all these firstborns, which included Pharaoh's, he ordered the Israelites to leave, taking whatever they wanted, and get out of Dodge. So this is what they are observing over Passover, and that's why it's called Passover, because the angel of death was passing over. It's a very significant time. It's also what Yeshua and his disciples were observing as the Lord's Supper, the last meal. That's what they were doing. They were basically having the Seder Passover meal before Jesus was taken to be crucified. And along those lines, I grew up in the Lutheran church. We called that Maundy Thursday, and then there was Good Friday, and then you had Easter on Sunday. And I remember all those years I would sit in church and I would think to myself, you know, I'm just a common sense kid. And if Jesus said that he was going to be 3 days and 3 nights in the grave, how in the world was he crucified on Good Friday and rose on Sunday? There's no way that's 3 days and 3 nights. It's not. There is no Good Friday. There is no Maundy Thursday. More than likely, Yeshua was crucified on a Wednesday. That would give him the 3 days and 3 nights, because also keep in mind that we're talking about a Jewish calendar, not our calendar. So for this Passover here in April of 2024, what I'm watching for is to see if Israel will sacrifice a red heifer at that time. Now, maybe some of you are going, what in the world does a red cow have to do with Passover, and why would they be sacrificing it? Numbers 19, verses 1 to 10 reads, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, 'This is the statute of the law that the Lord has commanded. Tell the people of Israel to bring you a red heifer without defect, in which there is no blemish, and on which a yoke has never come.'" So this is a heifer that has never done any work. There's no white hairs, black hairs. It is completely red, unblemished. "And you shall give it to Eleazar the priest, and it shall be taken outside the camp and slaughtered before him. And Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood with his finger and sprinkle some of its blood toward the front of the tent of meeting 7 times. And the heifer shall be burned in his sight. Its skin, its flesh, and its blood with its dung shall be burned." This is the only sacrifice that God ever commanded to be a complete burning everything to ash. Any other time that an animal was sacrificed, they were always supposed to drain the blood out of it and not eat any of the blood. This is being burned up with its blood. This red heifer is completely different than anything else that they were ever told to sacrifice. It's very special. And as you can imagine, finding a red cow over in Israel is nearly impossible. "And the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet yarn and throw them into the fire, burning the heifer. Then the priest shall wash his clothes and bathe his body in water, and afterward he may come into the camp. But the priest shall be unclean until evening. The one who burns the heifer shall wash his clothes in water and bathe his body in water and shall be unclean until evening. And a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and deposit them outside the camp in a clean place. And they shall be kept for the water, for impurity, for the congregation of the people of Israel. It is a sin offering. And the one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. And this shall be a perpetual statute for the people of Israel and for the stranger who sojourns among them." From that time forward, So he tells Moses, this is what you're supposed to do. And this is going to be the very first time they ever did it. So they had the first red heifer sacrifice during Moses' time there. There have been 9 red heifers that have been found to match the criteria, which is very strict, that were sacrificed. This went up to the loss of the Second Temple, which was in 70 AD. Nearly 2,000 years have passed since the last heifer was sacrificed. There is a belief that when the 10th heifer has been sacrificed, this is going to be under the Messiah. This sacrifice needs to happen so that the third temple can be built and the implements and priests can all be purified with the ashes. That brings us to our modern era. 5 red heifers were found in Texas a year and a half ago that met the criteria, and they have been transferred to Israel. Texas rancher Byron Stinson raised the red heifers, and he did this on purpose. He wanted to raise red heifers in the hope that he would raise the 10th red heifer that was needed for this final sacrifice that we're going to have. The Talmud relates that a non-Jew named Dama ben Natina lived during the time of the Second Temple. He was a gem dealer, and a jewel from the breastplate of the high priest had fallen off. There were specific jewels and gems that were supposed to be put on these breastplates. I believe it was a huge diamond, and they weren't supposed to have him put that breastplate on without it having all of these things in place. So a group of priests came to him to buy a jewel to replace this. But he refused to provide the gems needed for the temple, despite the offer of a large reward, due to the fact that his father was sleeping on the key to the box that held the gems, and he didn't want to disturb his father's rest. So you can imagine these priests come in and they start wheeling and dealing. We'll give you 100 shekel for this gem. And Dama ben Natina's like, no, I can't. My dad is on the key. I'm not going to wake him up. I don't know if he gets really angry when he wakes him up or something, but he was like, I'm not going to disturb him. And the priests are like, we're desperate. You have what we need. We'll pay you. We'll pay you 500 shekel. They just keep raising it and raising it. They get to 1,000 shekels and he still refuses to wake his father. You can imagine the frustration of the priest. So they leave out of there in a huff because they're not getting their gem, even though they offered him this really huge reward. Eventually, Dama ben Natina's daddy wakes up. They open up the box, they get this gem out, and he runs after the priest, hoping to catch up to him, and he does. They started to pay him the 1,000 shekels that they had worked up to, but Dama ben Natina says, no, I just only want that initial 100 that I quoted you guys would be the price, just 100 shekel. In reward for that, they blessed him, and a red heifer was born into ben Natina's herd the next year, and he was able to sell the temple that heifer for the 1,000 shekels. Byron Stinson is not only a non-Jew, so he's a Gentile following along with this story, but he's also a diamond dealer. So he perfectly mirrors the story of this other man who gave a red heifer to these priests to be sacrificed. I don't think that's a coincidence either. The Bone Israel organization facilitated a group of rabbis making the trip to find the heifers and check them thoroughly. When they first came to the ranch, they found these 5 that were all pure. But as time passed, a couple of them got a little bit of white hairs. So they had to push them aside and said, nope. But there's 3 of them that have held, and they are at the right age right now to be sacrificed. You can't wait too much longer. So we're in this window where it has to happen. Israel has already prepared everything, including having bought the land that overlooks the Temple Mount that is the right location for the sacrifice. Israel has all the implements, and they have the parts to build the tabernacle. A lot of people think there's no way Israel's ever going to be able to build that third temple because you've got mosques sitting up there on the Temple Mount, and there's no way that the Muslims are going to let them destroy those. They don't have to. Early on, the Israelites used a tabernacle. There's no reason why this third temple can't be a tabernacle. They have everything set to build it, and I believe I heard it takes 18 days. King Solomon constructed the first temple, which was destroyed during the Babylonian invasion. Ezra and Nehemiah detail how the second temple was built when King Darius let the Jews return to Judea. The temple stood with some renovations by Herod the Great until the Romans destroyed it, and I believe that was in 71 AD. So we've got everything ready to rock and roll here. Seems perfectly set, and Israel has indicated that they do plan to do the sacrifice around Passover. These events are probably why, at least one of the big reasons why, there's probably multiple reasons, but Hamas attacked Israel when they did on October 7th, 2023. and a statement they issued about it seemed to indicate that as a reason. That they knew these red heifers were there, that they were planning on making the sacrifice, that they're trying to bring the Messiah in and build a third temple, and they are not happy about it. But there's something that's missing here. One of the other things they were supposed to do with the ashes of the red heifer is mix them with the ashes of the previous ones. We're 2,000 years down the road. The ashes from the other red heifers were kept in a jar. For centuries, men have looked for this jar. It's like an Indiana Jones kind of thing. Some believe that Qumran is the site described in the copper scroll that was found with the Dead Sea Scrolls. This place is called Wadi Ha-Kipa, and cave number 4 is the cave of the column, whose entrance is described in the copper scroll. This stuff, it just blows my mind sometimes when I look at it. Rewind back to what I said earlier about where the eclipse is passing over. I don't know how I ended up on the National Park Service's website looking at what they had that they own, I guess, that the government owns, that is going to be in the path of this total solar eclipse. I don't know why I decided to look at the Perry Memorial and see that it's this huge column. But you can imagine when I'm reading this about people looking for the ashes of the red heifer, and I come across this thing called Cave Number 4 is the Cave of the Column. I don't know. But I have heard rumors that some of the hidden items that were in here with the Dead Sea Scrolls, because there's a ton of caves for people who don't know, the Essenes were a sect of Jews, and they were the sect of Jews that I actually trust and look to. I don't trust the Sadducees, the Pharisees. I trust the Essenes. And this is who John the Baptist came out of. They took all of this stuff to Qumran to protect it. And I think they took a bunch of the implements from the temple. I believe they took this jar with the red heifer ashes in it here. So I think they may actually have this jar. The Copper Scroll relates that vessels and treasures, as well as a container of ashes of the red heifer, were taken from the Holy Temple before the destruction and hidden in this area by the Essenes. So it is possible that we do have these ashes too. So what I'm basically trying to tell you is I believe that this total solar eclipse that we're going to have on April 8th is a sign in the sky from God. I also believe that we should really be paying attention to what happens during Passover. If Israel does sacrifice that red heifer over Passover this year in 2024, if you are somebody who isn't already preparing for things to get really tough, remember how it was during the pandemic? Well, things are going to be worse than that. So just get ready, because that to me is going to signify that we are getting ready to step into the tribulation, which should last for 7 years. Yeshua will come back, and then he will have his 1,000-year millennial reign. And I think as we look at all of the things that are happening in the world around us, we have rumors of wars, particularly a huge war, World War III possibly. You've got Russia saying they're ready to fire nukes on people. We have the fighting that's going on over in Israel, fighting over this very precious and treasured land, the promised land of the Israelites. In our own country here in America, all hell seems to be breaking loose. It just feels like we are in a different time. And I don't know about you guys, but I definitely feel an urgency about it. If nothing else, make sure that you are a person of prayer and that you're praying during this time. And if you're somebody who doesn't already know Yeshua, that's what I call Jesus. It's his Hebrew name. I'm more comfortable with it. Now would be a great time to get to know him. It doesn't matter who you are, because I'll tell you what, I don't go to church, and there's a reason why I don't go to church. I don't feel welcome in church, and I don't feel fed in church. If I was to look to the church or people who call themselves Christians, I would have never been a Christian myself, and I don't think I ever would have come to Yeshua. But when I look at him, I see who he is, and he's someone who loves you no matter who you are. No matter what you've done, you can always come to him and you just tell him, I give my heart to you. I'm sorry for the things I've done. I accept the gift that you have given me, which we're going to be celebrating here over Easter. And because of what he did there on the cross and rising again, he has taken away all the punishment that you would get for the sins that you've committed. And it's an absolute free gift. All you have to do is ask. If you haven't done that, I would encourage you, now would be a great time to do that, because we have some crazy stuff getting ready to happen, I'm pretty sure. Want to thank you guys for tuning into this episode of The Ghost in You. I've been your host, Diane. If you'd like to send me some comments, you can do that at theghostinyoupod@gmail.com. And please follow us at Instagram, YouTube, and BitChute. May God bless you and keep you. The Ghost in You podcast is researched, written, edited, and produced by me, Diane Student. Our theme music is by Muse Music with Groove Studios. All of the music is by artists from filmmusic.io.